This summer, the world's best tennis players are coming back to Cincinnati. The Cincinnati Open returns August 8th through the 23rd. Bigger than ever, with new fan spaces, incredible food, drinks, and entertainment all in one place. Voted Tournament of the Year by the players themselves. Community Weekend starts August 8th. Finals weekend, August 22nd and 23rd. Get your tickets now at cincinnatiopen.com.
The Pat Kenny Show.
With Timber Living Log Cabins.
Saturday and Sunday from 10 a.m. on News Talk. Conversation that counts.
Roger Casement was executed 110 years ago on Monday at Pentonville Prison in London, having been convicted of high treason. He was buried in an unmarked grave inside the prison, but his body was later repatriated to Ireland in 1965. He was given a state funeral before being interred in Glasnevin Cemetery. My next guest is The Guardian's Ireland correspondent, also author of the book Killing Thatcher. He has written a book about Casement entitled A Rebel and a Traitor, A Fugitive, The Manhunt and the Birth of the IRA, which tells the story of Britain's pursuit of Roger Casement. Rory Carroll, good morning and welcome.
Good morning, Pat. Thank you.
Now, let's talk about Sir Roger Casement. I mean, the Sir was a reward for services to the Empire.
It was, because he was a hero of the British Empire, and he served very loyally and very effectively for many years. He performed amazing feats in Africa, exposing horrors in Congo and depredations by the Belgian King Leopold. And then he did it all over again in the Amazon, exposing abuses there against indigenous tribes. So he was considered kind of a Victorian wonder man. I mean, and for that, he was feted as the greatest humanitarian of the age.
And he was rewarded with his title as a result of this work. When did he start to favour Irish nationalism?
Well, he grew up in Antrim as a Protestant, and he had always imbibed the legends and stories of rebels in Ireland. And even when he served the British Crown as a Foreign Office consul, that kind of sentimental attachment to Ireland never left him. But it was after during the 1900s when he fell in love with the idea of the Irish language and Irish nationalism, home rule, but then he became more radicalized and he felt that he turned against the British Empire. He saw horrors in the Boer War, and then he just felt that British Empire was a force of a baleful force that was strangling Ireland and the world. And so he went so strong then against it.
Now, if this is a book with a hero, it's Roger Casement. It's also a book with a villain. And that villain is a man called Reginald Blinkerhall. Who was he?
Well, I would dispute that. Maybe two anti-heroes. I mean, Casement is an extremely flawed figure. I mean, he was very heroic. He could also be he was having a nervous breakdown. He was completely exasperating, and to his own friends and allies. But the core of the book of A Rebel and a Traitor is this pursuit. It's a manhunt. And in this case, his nemesis was Captain Reginald Blinkerhall. And he was the head of Admiralty Intelligence, which at that time, and we're talking about the First World War, had the greatest intelligence network. So he was at the center of this web, and he was tracking Casement, and he wanted to catch Casement because he despised him.
What was his preoccupation with Casement? Why did he despise him?
Because at the outset of the war, Casement turned up in Germany, of all places. And, you know, he turned his back on the British Empire. And at the time of greatest peril, when the British Empire is fighting for its life against the German Empire, it was then that Casement, from the British perspective, tries to drag a dagger into the heart of the British Empire. And so he's there in Germany trying to muster, guns and weapons and recruit prisoners of war for an invasion of Ireland.
Now, when you say prisoners of war, he was looking for Irish men who had served in the British Army, captured, became prisoners of war. He wanted some sort of an Irish brigade. Many of those soldiers were not greatly enthused of the idea because they were more loyal to the Empire than they were to the notion of some future republic.
Yes, that was his idea. He wanted to do like what Wolfe Tone had done or previous rebels, to kind of, recruit from the ranks of Irish prisoners. And it just backfired. He completely didn't understand. These guys had joined up the British Army before the war, and a lot of them were from Dublin. They were Leinster Fusiliers, and they their pay packets were paying for their wives and children back home. They had sworn an oath to the king. And here is Casement, as they saw it, kind of swanning into the prisoner of war camps where they'd been mistreated often by the Germans, saying, come join me in a rebellion and stick your head in a noose. So they were like, no, absolutely not.
Now, what did the Germans think of Casement?
At first, they're very impressed. I mean, he was a very tall, handsome. Everybody in the literature who met Casement remarked on just how amazingly handsome he was, I guess. And he could be extremely charming and persuasive. So they were initially, the Kaiser's court, took to Casement. But then over time, they fell out with him. And because Casement often, as he fell out with everybody, I mean, initially with his own British employers in the British Foreign Office, then also with fellow Irish rebels, and then the Germans were, in the end, quite fed up with him.
Now, they were fed up with him, and the idea of sending German troops to help out with the rebellion was just off the table. It was never going to happen.
Yes, and for Casement, he felt that this was, for a successful rebellion in Ireland, they had to have German boots on the ground. He wanted a full invasion force. And the Germans were saying, well, no, we can't. Because firstly, we can't really spare the troops. The Royal Navy is a stranglehold on the seas. At most, we can send some weapons. And if with luck, they may get through, but they may not.
Now, Casement at this point knows that the rebellion on Easter Monday cannot succeed without those boots on the ground. And yet, he wants to make sure that he is not the one who deprives his rebelling colleagues of weaponry. So it's kind of a mixed message.
Oh, completely. There's so many kind of layers and deceptions going on here. Casement, he asked the Germans, when they say, okay, we're going to send a weapon, a cargo load of weapons. And that in itself is a whole story there. They disguised a ship, and it's an amazing feat by the German Navy, to send this weapon through this British blockade around the Arctic Circle. Mm-hmm. And they actually managed to pull it off. Casement, meantime, persuades the Germans to send him in a submarine, which will get there faster. And his hidden agenda is he wants to get here before the weapons to speak to the rising leaders, like Tom Clark and others, to call off the rising. He says, it's going to be a fiasco, a debacle, don't do it. And the Germans kind of suspect this, so they're not sure. So they want to get rid of Casement, but they want to make sure he doesn't arrive before the weapons. And so this is the whole backstory to what happens in
Kerry. We have the Odd and the submarine arriving pretty simultaneously, but...
But then it all goes, I mean, for an Irish nationalist point of view, it is agonizing, the fact that the Germans pulled off this masterclass in deception and navigation in getting the submarine and the weapons ship both rendezvousing off Tralee Bay on the night that they were supposed to be there. And yet, being an Irish rebellion, it all fell apart and went pear-shaped. And this is all, of course, near the climax of the book. But the weapons end up not making it ashore. Casement does, but then he is swiftly captured.
Yeah, and he then tries to persuade them to allow him to make contact with his colleagues so he can help call off the rebellion, but they say no.
Yes, he's brought as a kind of a trophy prisoner to London, where he's then interrogated. There's this kind of denouement with his antagonist, with Captain Reginald Blinker Hall, at Scotland Yard. And this is on the eve of the rising. And Casement begs them to say, look, let me send a message to my comrades to call off the rising. And they say no. Because one of the subplots is that Reginald Hall knew about what the rising was going to go ahead, and he wanted it to go ahead because he felt it was going to be a debacle that would be easily crushed and would then give the British an opportunity to kind of extirpate these ruddy rascals of Irish nationalists once and for all.
Which, of course, is exactly what happened. However, the executions turned public opinion, which Blinker Hall did not anticipate.
That's right. The worm turned. And by then, Casement's still alive. He's then the last leader left alive of the rising, because all the others have been executed in Dublin and Cork. He is now in London. He's been given a full state trial for high treason. He's been convicted, sentenced to death. But then there's a great possibility that of a clemency, that they're going to, because of such was his record, he had been a knight of the realm. He still had admirers in British establishment for what his feats as a humanitarian before the war. Plus, the Irish Americans have a very powerful voice. And so there's a lot of pressure to spare Casement's life.
And that's where the diaries come in, the leaking selectively of the diaries, which many people argued over the years were forgeries, but you would demur, although you have a chapter on forgeries at the end of the book.
Yes, I mean, mainstream scholarship concurs that the diaries are authentic, and I go with that. The evidence is overwhelming. So these diaries, in which Casement chronicled his sex life, and he was gay, fall into the hands of his hunters, and they then have them. And Reginald Hall, what does he do with them? Now, this, for him, there's no question. This is an era of total war. For the first time in history, civilians are being bombed from the air. Passenger liners are being sunk by submarines. Mustard gas is killing thousands of troops. It's a dreadful war. Anything goes in this war for victory. Well, Reginald Hall gets these diaries, and this, and here's Roger Casement now being kind of lionized by his defenders as this, as and so he's like, well, no, I'm going to not only make sure that he is executed, but that his reputation is destroyed as well. So he leaks the diaries.
He leaks the diaries. Blinkerhall, I mentioned, you know, maybe the villain of the piece. He was something of an espionage genius, though, wasn't he? Codebreaker, mass surveillance, opening letters. The Royal Mail was not sacrosanct.
He was. He kind of pioneered, you know, the first kind of mass surveillance in the 20th century. He also helped to establish a code-breaking network of these people, so they're catching German wireless messages going across the Atlantic and then decoding them, breaking the codes. And this ended up being a precursor to Bletchley Park in World War II. And but in World War I, that this was crucial to his efforts to track Casement. And so he was a mercurial figure, Reginald Hall. And he served the British very well. And in fact, he subsequently was able to, it was thanks to him that the US came into the war on the British side. Mm.
And there's lots of conspiracy theories about that too, how that came about, people influencing the Oval Office from afar, and maybe misrepresentation of various things. That's maybe for another book. But how does this link up with your book, Killing Thatcher?
It only occurred to me halfway through this that, I mean, my first book or second book, Killing Thatcher, was about the IRA's plot to assassinate Margaret Thatcher in Brighton, 1984. And it was then, as I was doing the Casement's story, that I realized in a way this was a prequel, because this, you know, this all takes place against the backdrop of the Great War, and then the Rising, and then the birth of the IRA, because the first time the term IRA is coined and used was in the GPO. And, you know, 1916 led to the War of Independence, which led to partition, and as we know, kind of stored up a lot of trouble, literally the Troubles. And so in a sense, this book is a prequel to Killing Thatcher.
How does Roger Casement's legacy stand today?
With Casement, nothing is straightforward. His sexuality is an issue. Now he's amongst in the LGBT community. He's considered as a symbol in some place, as a hero. But what is also problematic is the fact that the youth of many of his partners were teenagers. So in our, you know, modern mentality, you know, that is problematic. Also the fact that he's buried in Dublin in Glasnevin Cemetery, the Republican plot. He didn't want to be buried there. He wanted to be buried in the boyhood glens of Antrim, where he was from. And yet the condition of the British returning his remains here was that he would not cross the border. Because even, you know, decades after his death, Roger Casement remained radioactive, and they felt that he could not be in Northern Ireland.
The questions, had he lived, you know, would he have ended up maybe behind bars like Oscar Wilde, you know, given the state of the law in those days?
Conceivably, I mean, had the diaries become public, yes. Also, I mean, what would he have done in the Civil War? Would he have, which side would he have gone with? And conceivably, some people speculate he might have become, had he chosen the right side, he could have become president.
It would be a great movie. It is full of daring do, contradictions, and
it is. I mean, he's our Lawrence of Arabia.
Well, the book is called A Rebel and a Traitor, subtitled A Fugitive, The Manhunt and the Birth of the IRA, from the best-selling author of Killing Thatcher, Rory Carroll. Rory, thank you very much for joining us in studio today.
Thank you, Pat.
The Pat Kenny Show on News Talk
with Timber Living Log Cabins.